It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this Thursday, this Thorn in the Side Thursday, the 14th day of September, 2023. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tube. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza. It is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. All time zones in between and the great globe round. Well, whatever time it is when you're listening to the podcast. And whether you're listening to the podcast or listening live at headon.live or on TuneIn or, right, in any event, thank you for being part of this remarkable little experiment in independent progressive broadcasting that is nearly 20 years in the making. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And if you do, if you are listening live and you want to pop by the aforementioned chat room, well, you'll be greeted by the early arrivers. That would be Theo and Squeaky and Ralphs and Irish Dave, and all capably moderated by Horn Chief Agronomist, Chief Economist, Chief Mathematician, and Bud Trimmer Emeritus, Roger, in Oregon. Thanks, Roger. Hi. I'm Robin. And like I said, it is Thorn in the Side Thursday. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So we say thank you to our 14th day of the month subscribers. And that means thank you to David in Oregon. Thank you, David. And thank you to Matt in San Francisco. Thank you to Ralphs. Thank you all for being partial sponsors of the program. And in that sense, helping to keep this entire thing on the air. We're still struggling. There's no doubt about it. Fundraising goal right now, where we are, is $1,655. That means that all 4 days of this week, so Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, plus Friday of last week, plus, $155 of last Thursday. We are more than a week behind now in terms of trying to keep all of this going. I don't know when the folks from my coal-fried power grid are going to show up and put us into darkness, but that day is imminent. And so if we can bring down, power bill's $400. And then we've got other bills to the tune of $350, $150. So basically $900. It would be great if we had a if we could make up some of the ground so that Friday on the front porch isn't $1,955 tomorrow. Well, thank you. That's so kind of you, Steve in New York. Greetings, you hot saucy babe. Right back at you, except for the hot saucy babe part. Greetings and hallucinations. So, as we, I've got a story I want to put some focus on later in the program. But let's hit the high notes first, I suppose. Nitwit Nero will not be going to trial in October in Fulton County. Now, he will go to trial at some point in Fulton County, one presumes. But it will not be in October. Judge Scott McAfee, and you really can't argue with his reasoning here. I mean, I guess you could. But I'm sympathetic to his position here. By the way, thank you, Ralphs. Ralphs has a $25 challenge on the table, and I'll play the clip here in a moment in honor, I guess, of something that Michael Cohen said about Nitwit Nero. And we will... Oh, excuse me. Oh, hold so much gin on the cornflakes. But we'll check out that clip in just a moment. From Ben Mycelis over at Midas Touch. It's kind of fun. I've got the link. In fact, I just queued it up, Ralphs. Thank you so much. So that we can get down to 1605. If somebody wants to jump in on Ralphs' challenge, she will take your $25 and she will turn it into $50. That's mighty generous of Ralphs. But just to get back to Nitwit Nero's trial, one of them, for a moment. Oh, by the way, thank you. Thank you so much, Cynthia. I had a lovely note from Cynthia earlier, because we were talking about voice and everything last night when I was talking with Allie. Just a note on your voice as compared to the before time. It may not seem like much to you, Cynthia says. Nonetheless, I detect a qualitative difference in your voice when listening to you now as compared to your voice from the before time. You've aired archived shows from some years back, and your voice on those old shows was more, I don't know the best word for it, but I'll just say, harsh. Now your voice may still be deep, but it is not harsh and sounds softer and more pleasing. There's a qualitative difference whether you realize it or not. Rock on, Cynthia. Cynthia, thank you. That's 2 days in a row that you've just made my evening. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm trying, and it is different when I'm out in public. It's just harder to do this for 3 solid hours. It's more Marilyn Monroe-ish when I'm out and about. But I don't think we want me singing Happy Birthday, Mr. President, for 3 hours, no. But back to Fulton County. Judge Scott McAfee said, among other things, oh God, here we go with the hiccups. Well, he confirmed that, in fact, Squidney, the Kraken lawyer, will be tried, as will Kenneth, Mr. Rogers with a Xanax problem, Cheesebro, on October the 23rd. So we will get a, we will, and that's a very short time away. Let's see, 16, 20, 20, 30, that's 39 days, is it? No, 23, yeah, 39 days away. Ciphering on the fly, it's never my strong suit. We will see the same evidence that will be presented against Nitwit Nero presented on October the 23rd. And despite Fonnie Willis, the district attorney's persistent pleas to just have to do this once, the judge recognizing the various and sundry difficulties involved said, among other things, that with 19 defendants, in an order, McAfee said, the precarious ability of the court to safeguard each defendant's due process rights and preparation, ensure adequate pretrial preparation on the current accelerated track, weighs heavily, if not decisively, in favor of severance. And then went into the various and sundry difficulties, noting, the Fulton County, Georgia courthouse simply contains no courtroom adequately large enough to hold all 19 defendants. And that got me to thinking. I do that sometimes. For instance, down in Kanawha County, West Virginia, which is the seat of government, Charleston, the old Kanawha County Courthouse has a great, big, humongous courtroom. Because once upon a time, courtrooms were built much larger because they drew a lot of spectators. Among other things, a lot of ink-stained wretches of the press were there. People curious about high-profile trials. We've got a similar courtroom here in Fayette County, West Virginia. And for fans of To Kill a Mockingbird, they've still got the old courthouse in Monroe County, Alabama, complete with its colored gallery and the voluminous seating for the white folks below. When the kids were little, we went off the beaten path and saw the site of the fictional Macomb, Alabama. But courtrooms used to be built like that. Big, airy, echoey. The plaster work, for instance, in the Kanawha County courtroom is simply lovely. But we don't do that anymore. Courtrooms are basically sterile little boxes if you ever watch any trials on, like, court TV or whatnot. They're uncomfortable. I mean, even the courtroom that I used to practice law in was big. And that was a courthouse that was built in the 1960s. Lots and lots and lots of wooden pews. I think made deliberately uncomfortable. And the chairs in that courtroom had wheels on them, of course. And it was impossible to... They were sort of groovy 70s-era vinyl-covered rollers with a sort of groovy 70s... 2001 A Space Odyssey vibe, and it didn't matter, you could try to sit in those chairs ramrod straight, and sooner or later, it didn't matter if you were prosecution or defense, both lawyers, or in a civil case, plaintiff and defendant, both lawyers looked like they were half drunk, because they would just slide down in these groovy 70s chairs. Well, I'm running a bit afield, I'm afraid. But the bottom line is, It is physically impossible, according to Judge McAfee, to try 19 defendants in the same courtroom. And so that means there will be severance into, well, we know now, two trials. If you can't try 19 in one courtroom, I'm guessing 17 isn't much better. Although we do know that they tried 13 a couple of years back, Fannie Willis did, when she busted the Atlanta area test cheating scandal in the school system. Using, I might add, the same RICO statute that she's using here against Nitwit Nero and his various and sundry crooks and minions. Now, we've got a little bit of a little bit of drama with this as well. In court today, Kenneth, Mr. Rogers with a Xanax problem, cheese bro, moved the court to force the DA's office to name names, to name the 30 unindicted co-conspirators who are referenced in the indictment. We think we know who most of them are, but there may yet be some surprises in there. Still rooting for Jensurrectionist Thomas to be on the list, and she hasn't been eliminated from the running as indicted co-conspirator number 6 in the D.C. trial. But we're not going to find out who they are because the defense will receive the names, but they'll be under a protective order so the public won't know. Because there's case law and generally speaking, ethical philosophies around naming unindicted co-conspirators. Remember Individual One? With everything that's happened, I guess we kind of forget that Nitwit Nero has long been an unindicted co-conspirator. He was Individual One with Michael Cohen. And speaking of Michael Cohen, let's go to the clip that Michael Cohen put out and that they ran over at Midas Touch, Ben Mycelis.
What else do you expect here? Play this clip of Michael Cohen.
New York Attorney General case. Alina Habba. She habba'd the entire problem. And what did she do?
Habba.
They failed. And I cannot imagine that this was done intentionally. Because it makes, again, no sense at all. Who trying to figure these folks out is really a difficult task in and of itself. But she failed to file the necessary documents in the New York Attorney General case against Trump, Trump Org, the kids, etc. So that case now is going to be a bench trial. No jury, unless the judge wants to bring them in for certain points in order to have a jury and panel. I doubt it, but the judge certainly can do that. This is going to be a bench trial where all the evidence is provided to the judge, who is the ultimate arbiter based upon his decision-making process. It is not going to any third parties. No jury is going to be impaneled. That, by the way, knocks off a minimum of 3 weeks to the start of the trial, because that's what it was anticipated that it would take in order to voir dire a jury in order to sit for this case. Astounding, absolutely astounding, the level of incompetence. And I want to remind people that the New York Attorney General's case is a $250 million base. That doesn't mean that it's a $250 million case. It means that she's starting the case at $250 million, going up to whatever she determines based upon the documents and the evidence that she's going to be able to prove before Judge Engoron, who Donald has been attacking on a daily basis, along with Judge Chutkin. Again, not smart. This is now going to ultimately be a financial disaster to him and the organization. And I say that not because I have any inside info other than the fact I know what they intend to raise at trial. Let's not forget I was deposed on this by Haba several months ago. So this case is starting. I was subpoenaed last Friday to appear as a witness for this case, which, if I can be open to my brigaders, which I am, I'm not thrilled about it. I do want to see Trump held accountable. I want to see Don and Eric held accountable. I want to see the Trump organization held accountable. But I want
don't leave out Iwanka.
Number one, being a witness at a trial, being deposed, meeting with prosecutors, DA, 23 times, several times with the AG. It's very taxing on not just your mind, but on your heart and your soul. And it's physically and mentally exhausting. And I happen to be exhausted. I truly am. I am exhausted. And as much as I wish that they did not send me the subpoena, they did. And I have no interest in being held in contempt of court like Mark Meadows is currently or Steve Bannon was. I have no interest in allowing this case to fall apart because I didn't have the fortitude to continue forward on this journey of truth to power. And so I'll probably take a couple of days off, you know, before that and really just shut down because they are going to grill me, and I'm talking about defense counsel, in the same manner as they did at the House Oversight Committee, which if you all watched it, and I'm pretty sure most people did, about 100 million people watched that ass beating. They were ruthless, demeaning, disparaging, ugly, five-minute statements made by each and every one of the Republicans, never asking a question. All they did was denigrate me with the same words that they were told to do by the Trump administration. It's exactly what they used to do during the Trump campaign, send out letters to the people who were going to be surrogates on television, telling them, use this buzzword, this is what we want to talk about, et cetera, et cetera. So I am certain that Haba, who I understand claimed today during a live appearance before the court, said that she is going to be first counsel on this case. And when I heard that, all I can do is chuckle because she is so out of her lane for defense in a matter like this against the New York Attorney General's office and the prosecutors that it's astonishing. And I also don't believe that that's going to be true. I believe days
that
before,
can't possibly be true. There's no way that Alina Haba will sit first chair and be the lead trial counsel in the New York Attorney General's fraud valuation case. Alina Haba
she hobbled the trial. Now, it may have blown past because, you know, we're so focused on the documents trial and we're so focused on the Stormy Daniels cover-up trial and we're focused on Jack Smith's trial in Washington, D.C., and probably more focused than anything else on Fannie Willis in Atlanta, because we know at least we are going to see that trial, because, wow, the federal judiciary is still stuck in the 18th century. Yeah, pre-telegraph, for God's sakes. And we get blurry, impressionist courtroom sketch artist sketches of whatever. But the fraud trial, Letitia James, the Attorney General of New York's fraud trial, is civil in nature. And there is no guarantee of a jury trial in a civil case unless one demands it. And she blew it. Unless it turns out that this was some sort of a calculated decision, and I'm trying to figure out what the calculation would be to leave this in the hands of the, you know, when you look in a trial process, whether it be civil or criminal, the jury, generally speaking, is the finder of fact. They're the ones who determine what the truth is in competing accounts. The judge is the finder of law. The judge determines how the law applies to the facts and how the law applies to the testimony and the evidence. But because Alina Habana and this speaks a little bit to hiring counsel for a parking garage to represent you in a multi-million dollar suit, and that, you know, that civil, I don't know for a fact, but I don't think that civil suit can be covered by Nitwit Nero's, any of his PACs or the Republican National Committee or anything like that. So we don't know how Alina Habana is getting paid. Maybe there's some sort of dodgy situation where she's getting paid for, say, the federal case in Miami. And this, but really, if she's going to be first chair, oh my stars and garters, this is going to be a thing to behold. But Michael Cohen seems to think no. And so in a civil trial, you have to ask, you know, and that's why the last thing on a complaint or a defense or an answer is that, you know, the defendant demands a trial by jury. And so Nitwit Nero has been trashing the judge in this case and trashing the attorney general. And the judge that he's been trashing is going to be the finder of fact. Instead of having a jury with a verdict form, it will simply be the judge. Instead of having 6 or 12 angry people in a room with a verdict form that says, are the defendants liable? Yes, no. If yes, to the tune of what? And you give the jury foreperson a pen, and they write down the number 1 and a comma and start writing zeros until their hands cramp. The judge he's been trashing is going to do this. And so, as Michael Cohen noted, the bidding starts at $250 million. Theoretically, that judge could break, shatter the Trump Organization into a million tiny pieces that all the king's horses and all the king's men cannot put back together again. And maybe I was wrong. Isn't Iwanka in this? Isn't she a named defendant too? How come Cohen laid off of her? You know, saying that he wants to see justice meted out to Traitor Tot and Eric the Dumber, the two together being dumber and dumberer. But he didn't mention Precious Princess Iwanka, my daddy, Trump Kushner. At least she could use some of those, some of hubby's Saudi billions to pay the judgment. Hey, sis, can you give us a loan? Going back to Fulton County, Stephen, New York says, of course D.A. Willis knew the court couldn't accommodate all those 19 people. She probably expected that she would not be trying all 19 at once. Her actions have all been about pressure and getting people to flip. As evidence comes out, to paraphrase those who are Alabama football fans, roll flips. Rolling, rolling, rolling. No singing, Robin. Trying to get down to 1605 because Ralph's is going to double the first 25 that comes in. Thank you. Ralph says, no, Iwanka is part of this suit. Wonder why Michael Cohen didn't mention it. But unless it was a calculated decision not to ask for a jury trial. Oh, Darlene says she was saved by the statute of limitations. Okay. Knew there had to be a reason. But that smells an awful lot like potential legal malpractice. I wonder if she'll even still be counsel by the time this thing rolls around. As they've described it at Midas Touch, it's counsel for the parking garage's billion-dollar screw-up. The parking garage lady's calculation, Steve says, urethra, I have found it. 2 + 2 = 5. Yeah, she's a little short of a jury panel. It feels like his legal troubles just eat the news cycle for lunch every day. Meanwhile, the horrors from Morocco pile up. People are literally walking around in and among and on dead bodies in Libya. Climate change is wrecking the planet. Human-made climate change is wrecking the planet. But a little bit of a follow-up to Darlene says Iwanka is not part of the suit. 6 years is the limit, and she hadn't been involved with the Trump org for at least that time frame. I guess that got her up. So even more so, can me and Eric here borrow a billion or so? Oh no, we'll pay it back. Promise. Yeah, look, I'll give you my IOU. Oh, Donnie. We all know who our daddy is, and we all know who we are. Now, like I said, a follow-up to yesterday's story about the vileness coming out of the Catholic Diocese of Cleveland. The Democratic mayor of Cleveland, Justin Bibb, apparently has some courage. because he didn't waste any time denouncing Holy Mother Church. As a Christian, Justin Bibb said, the new Catholic Diocese of Cleveland anti-LGBTQ plus policy is a shocking betrayal of the church teachings that have shaped who I am today. He must be a Catholic. For me, faith is about universal love and acceptance. Instead, the new policy forces LGBTQ plus kids to hide their authentic selves and attend school in fear of persecution for who they are. I extend my heartfelt solidarity to our LGBTQ plus friends and students. Rest assured that this policy, along with any expressions of hatred, doesn't go unnoticed. And of course, Holy Mother Church knows that they are untouchable because of the perverted way that this current most puissant dread sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesty on the Supreme Court reads the First Amendment. All one need do is claim to have a sincerely held religious belief, and it's and as long as it's the right religion, it's a get out of anything you want free card. The diocese is taking some heat. They said, these men in dresses said, "Oh, the Catholic diocese." The Catholic Diocese of Cleveland has taken existing guidance and practice in matters of sex, sexuality, and gender identity and developed them into a formal policy rooted in scripture and church teaching to help ensure that these matters are addressed in a consistent, pastorally sound, and authentically Catholic manner across our diocesan and parish institutions and schools. We hate the little queers. Jesus hated the little queers. And so, our policy hates the little queers. But they went on and said, "Hey, so listen, y'all, each and every person is welcome and invited to be a part of the church. As long as you're not queer. We hate the queers. Each one of us brings our own struggles and questions in the church like Christ." The church is nothing like Christ. Reminds me of what Gandhi is said to have said. "I like your Christ. I do not like your Christians. They're so unlike your Christ. The church meets each one of us where we are. It is our hope that this policy, in tandem with the pastoral and theological resources found on the diocese's website, helps each person to live more fully in the truth of their identity as a son or daughter of God who is made body and soul in His image." So women are made in a masculine image? Well, sure. Because after all, Eve was the first trans girl. She was made out of a man. They still don't have a good explanation for that. But that story was painful. Can you imagine? And you know, you don't have to be LGBTQ plus to have sympathy and empathy and compassion. Can you imagine being a kid whose consciousness of their gender or their sexuality or both are awakening within them, and knowing that every day you go to school in one of those shithole theocratic concentration camps, that the old men in the dresses hate your guts? That ain't easy to do as an adult. Imagine for a moment what it must feel like for a child. Especially when that Holy Mother Church professes to be pro-life. Wonder when the last time a Roman Catholic priest in the Diocese of Cleveland got caught fucking a little boy. Bet it wasn't, that wasn't that long back. Maybe some lawsuits might come along from some of those sexual assault victims and put them out, maybe put Holy Mother Church out of the school business. Now, the follow-up story comes from The Hill, and I just checked in on the little poll that goes with it. To what extent do you approve or disapprove of Cleveland Mayor Justin Bibb's response to the Catholic Diocese of Cleveland's new LGBTQ plus policy for its schools? I clicked strongly approve. But the way they wrote the question, it could be, do you, people thinking, do you approve of the policy? I don't know. But 64% strongly disapprove of the mayor's response. 33% approve. That's 165 responses. How sad that the church cannot be punished for this. You know, at least, you know, financially. Well, we haven't had a Monkey Up Declantis update in a little while. Monkey Up is now spending the money of Florida taxpayers to put up billboards in Illinois. What has earned the ire of the little tin pot go-go booted dictator in Florida? Well, the city of Chicago the city of Chicago has said that non-citizens may become police officers, and they got rid of cash bail. So using Florida taxpayer money, Monkey Up is putting up billboards in Chicago that say, citizenship matters, law enforcement matters, black lives don't matter. I added that part. Make the smart move to Florida. And so, apparently the state of Florida will provide a $5,000 bribe, I mean incentive bonus, for any cop who signs up to go cop in Florida. That's part of a scam, I mean program, that Monkey Up signed into law in 2022. Monkey Up said, Florida strongly supports law enforcement and has consistently enacted common sense criminal justice policies to keep our communities safe. Which, of course, they aren't. I went over and went on and said to, well, in
We stand behind our citizen officers, and we give them the tools to succeed professionally and personally. Other states deputize non-citizens and enact policies that favor criminals over victims and work to overtly or covertly defund the police, but not in Florida. I look forward to welcoming the Illinois men and women in blue to the law and order state.
Hey. I don't think the law and order state has it. Are they changing the license plates in Florida? It used to say the Sunshine State. Now it says the law and order state. Remember, of course, law and order is always a big element of any fascist campaign. Just today, while I was out, I saw a Toyota Tundra pickup truck with Florida plates, and it wasn't the usual one that's got an orange in the middle of it, no. Somebody paid extra for this one. Bless their hearts, they had a Save the Manatee license plate. Reckon they were maybe up here whitewater rafting. It's that time of year. Two people already dead, by the way, on the Gauley River. At the beginning of this Gauley River whitewater rafting season. The Gauley is a ferocious river. Both individuals were over 60. You will not catch me going down the river. I've thought about doing the New River once in a while, from time to time. But no. No. Yeah, it just doesn't feel like a great idea. But Lord, tourism brought in several billion dollars to West Virginia last year. One of the victims was from a place called Monterey, Virginia. Curiously, I've been through Monterey, Virginia. There's not a lot to Monterey, Virginia. It sits in the valley of the Bull Pasture River. There are three rivers in that part of Virginia that are the Bull Pasture, the Cow Pasture, and the Calf Pasture River, and I have a fascination with it because my earliest Kincaid ancestors settled on the Calf Pasture River. And years ago now, Annette and I stopped there, and I showed her the Calf Pasture River. There's a little nature preserve there, and it's absolutely beautiful, and the Calf Pasture River is about, 5 inches deep. Anna waded out into it. It was just sweet. And the Bull Pasture River does not rage or torrent. It's a beautiful, beautiful valley between two ridges with just a gorgeous green swath down this. And you just look at it and you go, this would be a nice place to just set up shop for and live. Horrifying. And back to Illinois, the law that will allow non-citizens to become cops goes into effect in 2024, and of course the cop unions objected, and some of them did, and of course the way Monkey Up, because he's a fascist and a bigot and an everything phobe, the Venn diagram of everything he hates is just a circle, is painting this as though, I guess, the undocumented migrants that he's putting on buses and sending to Illinois are just going to get off the bus and become cops. But the fact of the matter is, the legislation in Illinois says that a person, an individual who is not a citizen but is legally authorized to work in the United States under federal law, is authorized to apply for the position of police officer, subject to all requirements and limitations other than citizenship to which other applicants are subject. But you see, any immigrant in this country, even the legal ones, are undesirables in the eyes of the fascist monkey up Duplantis, who got into office the first time with the assistance of real live, no kidding, Nazis. And the elimination of cash bail is just makes sense. It cuts down on the overcrowding in Illinois' already overcrowded jails and means that nonviolent offenders can be released on their own recognizance. You know, arsonists are not going to walk the streets. Rapists are not going to walk the streets. Murderers are not going to walk the streets. But people with, Governor J.B. Pritzker said this way, pretrial detainment will be determined based upon, quote, the danger an individual poses to the community instead of by their ability to pay their way out of jail. And frankly, in a debate, if there were ever to be one, there won't be, but in a debate between J.B. Pritzker of Illinois and Monkey Up Duplantis, I'm pretty sure Monkey Up would come out of that black and blue. And since he's running for president, he made a visit to Elmhurst, Illinois, which isn't that far from Chicago. Yes, I forgot to do the Monkey Up Duplantis voice, Ralphs. Let me fix that. Speaking at the Elmhurst event, he said, anybody who's interested in coming down, if you want to be part of our law enforcement community, just know that the door is open. You know, he will eventually screw up. And Monkey Up will probably eventually wind up in prison. And that's fine by me. The book by McKay Coppins on Senator Bishop Willard Romney is causing quite a stir. Because, among other things, he's named names. And what I mean by that is he's telling who the stupidest people in the Senate are. And according to Romney, A Reckoning, and the excerpt published at The Atlantic this week, Willard said he didn't particularly want to work with anointed booger-eating future president of the King of America, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, or Josh Hauling-Ass Hawley, because they continued to parrot their orange god emperor's lies. In particular about the domestic terror attack on the capital of the United States on January 6, 2021. It's a little different, according to the book, where Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, he works in the lumber mill there, is concerned. The book says, Romney drew a distinction between the Republican colleagues he viewed as sincerely crazy and those who were faking it for votes. He was open, for instance, to partnering with Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, the conspiracy-spouting, climate-change-denying, anti-vax Trump disciple. Once, Romney told me after listening to an extended lecture on Hunter Biden's Ukrainian business dealings, he blurted, "Ron, is there any conspiracy you don't believe?" I'd like to see the more complete list. I want to know if Tommy the Tuber is on it. I want to know if Marsha XXX Blackburn is on it. By the way, Marsha is a big proponent of a thing running through Congress called COSA, the Keep Our Safe Keep Our Cucks, something about Keep Our Kids Online Safe Act. And it's got bipartisan support in the Senate. Among other things, the usually intelligent Connecticut Senator, Blumenthal, is on board and thinks it's the neatest thing since sliced bread. And I'm not going to go after him. But at the same time, Marsha XXX Blackburn is also on it. Oh, Senator Blumenthal, if you find yourself in agreement with Marsha XXX Blackburn, you might want to rethink why you're behind the bill. Because Marsha XXX Blackburn, Marsha, is saying that this bill will be a driving force in removing all LGBTQ content from the interwebs, with a particular focus on any trans content. And with your humble hostess being a tran, that could theoretically spell the end of this program. Now, to be sure, Senator Blumenthal says, no, we've completely gone over the bill. It could never possibly be used for the censorship of the LGBTQ community. Oh, my sweet summer child. May I direct your attention to the Religious Freedom Reformation Act of the 1990s that was passed by the Congress specifically for the purpose of getting the federal government off the backs of practitioners of small and not necessarily mainstreamed religions, like indigenous faith systems. That's what it was passed for. That's what everybody agreed that it was for. And yet here we are in 2023. And that selfsame bill is used as a cudgel to allow religious bigots to whine and cry and piss and moan that they don't want to bake pizza or a cake or cupcakes or make a website for the queers because of their deeply held religious beliefs. So, I'm more inclined to think that the bill is as dangerous as Marsha Blackburn, idiot, says it is. Actually, she could have done a lot better job for her own cause if she had just kept her idiot mouth shut and let various and sundry senators grunt and bleat about how we're going to protect children on the internet, and then done the dirty business once she got the bill passed. The Republicans like the bill. Democrats like the bill. The White House liked the bill. And the summer children in the Democratic Party are, oh, no, they would never do that. It couldn't possibly be. Color me skeptical. Because, see, while your various religious bigots, zealots, maniacs, and shit weasels, well, they get preferential treatment based on their sincerely held religious beliefs. If you have a sincerely held religious belief that Matthew 25 says you don't shit on the LGBTQ community, not so much. Jack in Shreveport. Gun craziness juxtaposition. I just saw Nicole Wallace interview a Dallas-based trauma surgeon who has decided to run for office due to what he's seen in his work caused by gun violence. He's running a compelling political ad on this subject. Also in the interview was Fred Gutenberg, who lost his daughter. During that interview, my phone dings to alert me of an incoming message. The message happily touted that Louisiana's Attorney General and candidate for governor, Jeff Landry, had just received an endorsement from the National Rifle Association. And he also has an A-plus rating from them. What a country. Thanks, Jack. Yeah, the ugliness is beginning to permeate, and once again, we're going to have to do everything we can to keep our sanity, our wits about us. As the maggot sewer opens up. Meanwhile, David in South Carolina stands says, hey, remember, with the GOP, the cruelty is the point. Yes, it is. And Theo, with a note, says, cash bail can be a booby trap. Hey, Robin. I've read and heard accounts of cash bail statutes being used for entrapment, with the cash being rigorously tested for drugs and the parties trying to bail someone out being charged with felony drug offenses. It's well past time this loophole was closed. Yeah, that story from long, long ago that said that practically every piece of paper money in the United States had residue of some form of drugs on it. Quite often cocaine. See, that's what happened when McDonald's took away the little coffee spoons. Hey, what, you got a rat problem? Let's bring in some cats. Oh, shit, we got a cat problem now. Well, let's bring in some snakes. Well, let's see, it was rats, then snakes, then cats. And the next thing, you're overrun. This is fun, says Steve in New York. Kim Davis, sister court Kim Davis, must pay $100,000 to the same-sex couple she denied a marriage license down in Round County, Kentucky. The place where my namesake great-grandmother was born. David Ermold and David Moore sued sister clerk Kim Davis, and the case has gone to trial. The jury, tried and true, heard the evidence. And last year, a federal judge said that she violated the constitutional rights of the two gay couples who sued her. U.S. District Judge David Bunning declared that the sister clerk, the multiply married and divorced sister clerk, good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Christian, cannot use her own constitutional rights as a shield to violate the constitutional rights of others while performing her duties as an elected official. And so they impaneled a jury to try the case relative to damages. And they awarded $50,000 each to David Ermold and David Moore. The second couple, James Yates and Will Smith, no, not that Will Smith, were awarded no damages. Her grifty free lawyers said,
"Oh, we look forward to appealing this decision and taking this case to the U.S. Supreme Court, where we're hoping they'll cook the books for us based on her sincerely held religious beliefs."
Meanwhile, the Kentucky LGBTQ plus organization Fairness Campaign and their executive director, Chris Hartman, said, "Discriminatory actions have consequences. When you are a representative of the government, you must follow the law and treat everyone with dignity and respect, including LGBTQ Americans." And said that Kentucky is at present, my word, not his, a shithole because of the ongoing campaign of mistreatment of the LGBTQ community. Hartman added, "We in our Commonwealth have been swept up in the national fervor against trans kids. Our community is hurting, scared, and is uncertain of its future. Sadly, our states are making refugees of their own residents, forcing LGBTQ people and their families, particularly trans kids, to cross state lines for refuge and safety," which goes back to that harrowing number that my friend, our new friend, your new friend, Allie, talked about last night. That right now, roughly 8% of the trans population of the United States is fleeing and seeking refuge in safer states. And that within just a few years' time, if these noxious fascist bills are not stopped, and these states are not stopped, that will probably be fully half of the trans population of this country. Now, California, Oregon, Washington, New Mexico, Minnesota, Illinois, Michigan, New York, Massachusetts, Vermont, Connecticut, Maryland are all the so-called safe states, some much larger than others. But even, even a 500,000 people is a lot for those states to accommodate. And people don't want to leave their homes. I don't want to leave mine. But it is a constant source of stress and a worry in the back of my mind, and sometimes much closer to the front, that day may come. And I don't know what happens then. But still, Sister Clerk Kim won't be ponying up the money anytime soon, because they're going to take it all the way to our most puissant dread sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesties, who are hell-bent on the destruction and the division of this nation. Constructive secession, I have called it. Oh, and a note from Kim in New York. Hi, Kim. Hi, Robin, Kim says. "I wanted to share this letter from one of New York City's few Republican city council members." "I'm sure," Kim says, "you've heard about the thousands of migrants who have arrived here and how Mayor Adams is handling providing shelter and services to them." And Mayor Adams has not done himself any favors in blaming the Biden administration and not blaming the people who, the monkey ups and the Greg Assbots, who are putting people on buses and sending them to places like New York and Chicago. This tweet is in reaction to the mayor using one of our parks to provide a shelter site. It's right out of the Trump and Joseph McCarthy playbook. Absolutely despicable. Huh, a tweet won't load. How strange. Let me check over here on a different device. Oh, in the meantime, note coming in from Arnold. Going back to the Keep Our Kids Safe Act, or something along those lines. Let's see, no, that's not it. No, that's not it either. But, yeah, it's a bill that would allegedly protect children from bad stuff on the Internet that Marcia says will be used as a tool to shut down any Internet content that touches on transgender people. To keep the children safe. But, okay, no, I was going to go over to... Oh, let's see if it'll load here, Kim. There it is. I don't know what happened. Joanne Areola, no, really, is the... Republican council person from New York for District 32. Now more than ever, we need unity in New York City. I am calling for all Republican, conservative, and common sense New Yorkers to unite and stand together in the face of this migrant crisis. We need a strong, indivisible front to stand against those who want to destroy our communities. And on her letterhead, dated today, my fellow Republicans, conservatives, and common sense New Yorkers, our city is under grave existential threat. Every day, this could have been drafted by Archie Bunker. Every day as more and more illegal migrants pour into the Big Apple. Who says they're illegal? Monkey Up is sending legal asylum seekers afield. Every day as more and more illegal migrants pour into the Big Apple, that threat grows larger. This is why I am asking for unity today, so that we may truly face this issue head on as a strong, united force. I am calling on all who hope to protect our communities, asking you to put aside whatever differences we may have and to move past any personal feelings that you may hold towards your fellow common sense New Yorkers. Let the squabbles of the past rest, at least for now. How very fascist of her. Let's attack the helpless migrants, and then we'll get back to attacking whoever else. So that we can more fully wage war against the governor, the president, and all others who advocate for the continuation of this entirely untenable experiment in illegal migration. In the face of this adversity, we cannot and must not despise those with similar ideals. Fascists together. I added that part. Division will only lead to defeat. Instead, We must focus all of our energy against those seeking to break up our neighborhoods and tear apart the fabric of the city. Let us remember that as we share a common goal, fascism, to protect our communities and preserve the essence of New York, in this shared mission, we find strength. So let us all come together now, in this moment, and show the rest of the country that New York City stands with one voice, and with that voice, we will win. Sincerely, Joanne Ariola. Sincerely, Roseanne Rosanna Dana. I hate fascists. Somebody asked her, have you been to the Holocaust Museum just to cheer when the U.S. sends the boats back? Somebody else followed. Ariola, that's a Native American name, right? Yeah, she wants to. How's about that? She wants to wage war against the President of the United States. Honey, move to Alabama. They're not going to like your accent, but they're going to love the way you think, sweetie. Thanks, Kim. I think. God, that's obnoxious. And I know you've just. Yeah. It's got to be sickening. I trust she's not in your district. But I want to backtrack a little bit to Bishop Willard. Because when I got up this morning, there they were on my filthy morning habit. Asking a fair and honest question. Willard, why did you stay a Republican?
You don't believe me? Let's talk to a guy who actually serves with him. You know, Willie, we've got some news on Mitt Romney right now, and we're going to read it. But before that, this morning early, I got up and I started reading some excerpts from McKay Poppins' extraordinary book. Listen to some of these things that Mitt Romney rightfully said. First, a very large portion of my party really doesn't believe in the Constitution. And then he says of Mike Pence, no one has been more loyal, more willing to smile when he saw absurdities, more willing to ascribe God's will to things that were ungodly than Mike Pence. Let me say it again.
Wow.
Few people were more willing to ascribe God's will to things that were ungodly than Mike Pence.
Yeah, and Bishop Willard would know, because he's a bishop.
Holly and Cruz, he said, were two of the smartest people he ever met in politics. But he said there they were on January the 6th, making a calculation that put politics above the interest of American democracy and the U.S. Constitution. And then this, when Romney took the stage at a Utah Republican meeting in 2021 after the January 6th riots, he quickly realized he'd underestimated the vitriol awaiting him. The heckling and booing got so loud and sustained he could barely get a word out. He labored to push through his prepared remarks. He became fixated on a red-faced woman in the front row who was furiously screaming at him while her child stood quietly by her side. He paused in the speech and couldn't help himself. He looked down at her and he said, aren't you embarrassed? Aren't you embarrassed? And neither that woman, nor Mike Pence, nor Josh Hawley, nor Ted Cruz, nor my old Republican Party, or Mitt Romney's old Republican Party. Embarrassed. You know, one thing, I've been very, very complimentary of what Mitch McConnell did on January the 6th. What I found out from this reporting is that on January the 2nd, Angus King called Mitt Romney and said, we have a problem. Intel is suggesting that the far right extremists are coming to Washington, D.C. They're bringing weapons. There's going to be violence. Mitt Romney immediately picks up his phone. He texts Mitch McConnell and says, we're in trouble. We need to plan for this. This is what's going down.
They're going to burn down Mitch your McConnell house, Mitch.
Didn't return his text. Radio silence. When a sitting member of the United States Senate told the Senate Majority Leader, we are going to be facing violence on January the 6th. And so Mitt Romney thought back about that as the senators were being chased.
And even Joe sort of blows by the real horror of all of that. Maybe he'll get to it in a minute. They want to burn down your house, Mitch. They are smuggling weapons into Washington, D.C. Crickets. You know, he earned that nickname, Moscow Mitch, for a reason. Why wouldn't you do something? Why wouldn't you take some kind of action? Was he glitching? Is that just another one of these unreported glitches on January the 2nd? Sounds a little like the Enterprise going across the screen in those interminably long scenes from the first Star Trek movie. And sometimes I think that the morning zoo crew there really are flabbergasted. Sometimes I think that Joe just honestly cannot believe that really is his old party. But the shocker, I mean, not really, is that what happened January 6th, 2021 was a culmination. It wasn't something that sprang fully formed from the head of Nitwit Nero like Athena springing from the head of Zeus. It was a process. It was something that has been going on because I'm an old. And I've been watching for decades. The seeds of January 6, 2021 can be found in the batshit crazy remarks of a backbench congressman from Georgia in the late 1980s whose name was Newt Gingrich. They can be found in Richard Hofstadter in the early 1960s in the paranoid style in American politics. Some of us, and when I say some of us, the first among us, my dear friend Mike Malloy, has been screaming from the rooftops again since the late 80s. Some of that Gingrich crap I first learned about because I would get off work at CNN, get in my little truck, and head up I-75, and the minute I got in the truck, turned the radio on, and it was already tuned to, what was it, AM750 WSB? And Malloy would be on the air, hollering about talking with the best of his persuasive abilities about the rise of fascism in the United States of America. And he wasn't wrong then. And so over a career that has spanned, let's see, 26, 29, 49 years, he's been documenting this stuff and talking about it. And bless his little heart, Bishop Willard and Joe Scarborough are shocked. Shocked, I tell you, shocked to find out that they have been lifelong members of a party hell-bent on turning this country into a theocratic fascist dictatorship. And the volcano erupted on January 6, 2021 because people like Mitch McConnell refused to act. Now, I'm still curious to see if at some point some spokes creep in McConnell's office
Leader McConnell, he reached out on the QT to find some to share the information and pass it to people who could act on it.
If something like that comes out, please remember that I said that, because it sounds like the kind of bilious garbage that would come out of that office. Mitch was only outraged after it failed. And while he doesn't like Donald Trump, he lacked the courage of his convictions to follow through on the impeachment. If he had said, impeach, yes, convict this man to his caucus, we might have gotten the 67 votes necessary to remove Donald Trump from office and make sure that he could never run for any political office again. Kind of like Sandra Day O'Connor and Bush v. Gore in 2000. She knew what the right answer was. She knew what the right thing to do was, but she did the political thing instead. For want of a nail, a shoe was lost. For want of a shoe, the horse was lost. For want of a horse, the king was lost. For want of a king, the kingdom was lost. Isn't that how it goes?
Well, let's just finish up with Joe here and see how he handled it.
All around the Capitol, and they were trying to find a safe room. And one of the security guards said, well, the senators know where they're going. And Romney's aide snapped and said, no, they don't. They don't know where they're going. What, there's no plan for this? You have no plan to get these Republican senators and Democratic senators to a safe space? And at that point, Mitt Romney realized that not only had Mitch McConnell ignored his warnings, he'd ignored the warnings of everybody else. And there they were, lost among a mob, desperately trying to find a room where they could save United States senators' lives. A very large portion of my party, Mitt Romney said, really doesn't believe in the Constitution. And it's confirmed when Donald Trump says he wants to terminate the Constitution. And 4 or 6 of 8 Republicans say, yeah, we're on that guy's side. People ask, why is Mitt Romney retiring from the Senate? I ask, how in the hell did he stay there in that Republican Party for so long, Willie?
Fair question. He could have, you know, his obviously one of his friends is Angus King, who is an independent. He could have left the party as a show of patriotism. But he didn't. He didn't. No. He didn't. And make no mistake, it's not that he's tired of fighting the fight, Mitt Romney. He has read the writing on the wall. And he knows that he will lose a primary against a further right candidate. So instead of standing and fighting, he's cutting and running. Because while he may not like what has happened to his party, he may not like what his party has been nigh unto forever and anon. Remember, his daddy, George, ran against Nixon in 1968 because he saw Nixon as too radical. He saw Nixon for the future crook he would become. This was a point in time when Nixon was torpedoing peace talks that might have brought an early end to the Vietnam War that LBJ knew about and said, and there's not a damn thing I can do about it. The Bulwark put up an article, Farewell to Mitt Romney, Republican with a spine. Really? I'm not trying to beard the wounded lion. But when a man bails out of the Senate because he knows he's going to lose a primary, well, that's considerably different from retiring because because you're exhausted or you feel like you've earned your rest or maybe he's got some incurable disease. And if we're going to say that there's something heroic about all of this, then isn't it fair for us to ask, why was he not making these public pronouncements earlier? Why are we only learning about this because McKay Coppins has a book to sell? Is Mitt getting a piece of the action on the book? Are these questions fair to ask? I feel like they are. You, of course, are free to disagree. You can call in 844-843-4676 or reach me on Skype, Robin Kincaid Horn, RobynKincaidHorn. Send me a contact request and we'll be chatting away. Steve in New York says, McConnell, something occurs to me, and this jibes with my own thinking. Something occurs to me about this that sends a chill down my spine. There is no way that if Mitt Romney knew about them wanting to burn down Mitch's house, Mitch, as the Senate Minority Leader, didn't. Given that, this makes me think that McConnell was in this up to his eyeballs. Mitch knew enough not to be scared. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking. As to Romney Sr., Steve says, I remember the story where Romney Sr. was very pro-Vietnam War until he went to Vietnam. When he came back, and I think this is pretty much verbatim, what he said was, this war is unwinnable. And he did have the courage to say that. And he said it in real time. Unlike his son, who's only breaking his silence now that he knows, now that he knows he's a short timer. Flavio, joining in the chorus, says Bishop Willard ain't no hero. He was sucking up to Trump trying to get appointed Secretary of State, had dinner with Trump. There are pictures of him grinning, as you often say, like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush. I don't know, Flavio. I see that. Every time I see that photo of him turning toward the photographer, Trump behind him, full face, full frontal, looking at the camera, and Trump's grinning like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush because he knows that he's torturing someone that he despises. You know, Donald Trump strikes me as the kind of creature that as a child would pull the wings off butterflies. But the look on Bishop Willard's face, Flavio, at least for me, the first thing that always comes to mind for me is Jeff Goldblum in The Fly. You know, that moment.
Help me! Help me!
Remember? Look at that photo again and see if you don't hear Jeff Goldblum.
Help me! Me.
Sorry. So here we are, well past the halfway point of the program. This is Conversation Radio. Loved the conversation with Allie last night. Hope you enjoyed it, too. Claire told me that she did. Said so on social media. Several other folks did as well. And if you've got any thoughts on anything that we've touched on so far or haven't gotten to yet, feel free to jump right in. In the meantime, it is Thursday, and we do have the Green News Report, courtesy of Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen, those wacky kids. So we'll check in with them. And I hate to talk about it. I'm so sorry. I want the electricity to stay on here. I'm funny that way. I want to be here for Friday on the front porch tomorrow. I don't know. Fundraising hole is $1,655. Ralph's will double $25 if it comes in. And turn it into 50, and that'll get us down to 1605, and that'll at least keep us, what, $95 away from having a $2,000 fundraising haul tomorrow. And over a week unfunded. So, please and thank you. If you can, don't hurt yourself, as always. Times are hard, I get it. Bought a couple of cartons of milk today, and they're bottles or jugs or whatever. Damn near $10. A tub of cream cheese, Jesus, is almost $5. And that was on sale. And so while inflation has dropped to 3%, apparently the downstream effects are a little slow getting to us proles. So I understand the times are hard. And, well, whatever comes in goes to the power bill. Plain and simple. Brad and Desi, what you got for us?
It's Thursday, September 14, 2023.
18,000 to 20,000 people could be dead in the wake of Monday's historic floods.
Monumental humanitarian crisis in Libya after catastrophic extreme flooding.
It is striking that we've already surpassed an annual record.
U.S. hits new record for billion-dollar weather disasters in a single year. Plus, Texas heat and drought causing widespread damage to local water systems.
All of that damage and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
No one is saying that climate isn't changing. What we are saying is the business model is a monumental grift.
Wait a minute. Are we talking about climate change, Greg Gutfeld, or Fox News? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, the situation in Libya just seems to be getting worse by the hour at this point.
Indeed, it does. As we go to air, a full-blown humanitarian crisis is unfolding in northeastern Libya, where the death toll in the city of Derna has risen above 6,000 after 16 inches of rain in one day generated massive floods that destroyed two dams and swept away entire neighborhoods. More than 30,000 individuals are estimated to be displaced, with widespread shortages of clean water, food, and medicine. The catastrophe underscores how the world's 20th century infrastructure was not designed for the new era of extreme weather disasters made more frequent and intense by human-caused global warming. A new analysis has found that since 1900, a full quarter of the deadliest weather disasters in Africa have occurred in just the past 7 years.
I had a feeling when this began that we were going to be looking at thousands dead. Now we're looking at tens of thousands dead.
Yes, it's just horrific. Here in the U.S., although not nearly on the same scale, yet another intense storm triggered flash floods that forced evacuations in some parts of New England this week. It dumped 10 inches of rain in just 6 hours in Massachusetts and Rhode Island, with heavy flooding destroying roads, carving out sinkholes, and eroding dams. No deaths were reported, but Leominster, Massachusetts Mayor Dean Mazzarella said the damage is widespread.
We've lost a number of roads, lost a few buildings, structural damage. All of these rivers overflowed and brought debris, and we have a partial building collapse just around the corner, and most of downtown was flooded.
The storm was not related to Hurricane Lee churning out in the Atlantic, which is forecast to bring even more storm impacts in coming days. Climate change is costly. 2023 isn't over yet, but NOAA announced that the U.S. has already set a new record for billion-dollar weather disasters in a single calendar year. Those are weather disasters that caused more than $1 billion each in damages. Four in the month of August alone. This year so far, the U.S. has been struck by 23 separate billion-dollar weather and climate disasters, the highest number since NOAA began tracking it in 1980. The toll includes the Maui firestorms in Hawaii, Midwestern drought, and multiple extreme storms and floods. NOAA scientists said, quote, "We are seeing the fingerprints of climate change all over our nation."
And we are just over three quarters of the way through the year.
Yep. And in Texas, this summer's record heat has damaged water systems across the state. The Texas Tribune reports that as heat and drought dry out the soil contracts, displacing and rupturing underground pipes, forcing cities to find new funding to fix thousands of new water leaks. And that, in turn, is hampering water conservation efforts amid a drought and highlights additional vulnerabilities of our critical infrastructure to man-made global warming impacts. But there is some good news. The Federal Emergency Management Agency this week announced $3 billion in new funding for communities in 27 states to build infrastructure resilience against climate change-fueled extreme weather, thanks to funding from the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act. Germany enacted a new law banning installations of most oil and gas heating systems starting in 2024.
Good.
Critics say the law's targets were watered down, but it will still cut emissions from the home heating sector by nearly two-thirds. And finally, encouraging news for building electrification. A new study finds that even in sub-zero temperatures, all electric heat pumps actually outperform fossil fuels. Even at temperatures down to minus 30 degrees Fahrenheit, electric heat pumps are twice as efficient and cheaper than oil and gas heating systems. And that may be why in Norway, electric heat pumps today make up almost all heating installations.
And beginning next year, a whole bunch of Americans are going to be able to put heat pumps into their own homes and have them paid for under the Inflation Reduction Act.
Yep.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Yeah, pump up the jam, pump it up while your feet are thumping. And the jam is pumping. Look ahead, the crowd are jumping.
Oh, that's clever. Pump up, yeah. We had a heat pump here for a while. And I'm not poo-pooing what Brad and Desi said. The numbers are what the numbers are. And it probably, I mean, it's bound to be more efficient. But once again, the problem becomes one of, yeah, electricity's great if your electricity's not coming from burning fossil fuels. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, we had a heat pump here once, and once the temperature dropped below 36 degrees or something, you know, basically you're heating your house with a toaster, which is probably still more efficient than heating your house with home heating oil. Or we'll now that the babies aren't in the house, we'll be using kerosene again. Anyway. They're probably better than they were when we had one. So I don't know. Maybe next year with the Inflation Reduction Act, if we still have a country. I hate that I have to put that kind of caveat on there. I don't know. And of course, it is the 14th, so we've got, what, maybe 9 more days of summer left? For people like Darlene and me, it's... these are bittersweet days because, of course, the bitter cold days are coming. By the way, I saw my first woolly worm today. I have some hopes for the winter because Mr. Woolly Worm was black on about the first third of his body and the rest of it was brown. Don't tell me that they changed color. I know. But we've also got a hornet's nest out in the half acre that is returned to Appalachian rainforest status. And that hornet's nest is very low to the ground. And, you know, the old timers say when the hornet's nests are low to the ground, you probably won't get a lot of snow. I haven't worked up the courage to go and ask the hornets. But a mild winter would be nice. Of course, a mild winter probably just means a lot of slop and rain. That's me, Robin Kincaid. Little ray of sunshine. Thank you, Gino in Utah. Thank you. Gino just did have a show on me. So, Gino, pick a day, any time between Friday and today, and that show is on you. Brought to you by Gino in Utah. Thank you so much. And so the fundraising goal goes down to $13.55, and with Rauch's challenge, $13.30. So we're getting closer and closer to knocking out the power bill and maybe running a couple of the other lupine pests off the porch. Thank you. And thank you, Gino. Thank you, Ralphs. And now we're down to 1305. Thank you to Kevin in Colorado Springs. Thank you so much. It's how we keep this all going. So that means we're not going to have a $2,000 fundraising hole tomorrow. And basically, we are fully funded for last Thursday, most of Friday. It does. It takes a great weight off my mind. Because I like doing this. And I'm glad that y'all I don't know if any of the highfalutins ever say this, but knowing y'all are out there and that this is worth your time, the precious finite time of your life, is a beautiful thing. Sean says, apply this towards the challenge. We all must get off our behinds to make sure Joe Biden is reelected. You know, Putin, Republicans, and Orange Maximus have election tricks up their sleeves. We can't rest. Amen. You're absolutely correct. I mean, that was another thing. It's why I call it my filthy morning habit, hearing that. Well, yeah, I mean, and you want to talk about fainting with damn praise? Well, yeah, the Biden's old, and it's a legitimate question. This is what was said that just sent me up the tree. I hate it when I go up the tree early in the morning. Well, he's old, and his age is a legitimate concern. Where was all the age a legitimate concern bullshit when Nitwit Nero was nearly falling on his face trying to walk down a ramp, hanging onto generals and British prime ministers and the like? I mean, we talked about it here, but didn't hear any of that there. Well, no. And that guy is bound to be in exponentially worse physical condition than Joe Biden is. And if you see the maggots, it's like, well, Biden can barely string a sentence together. You stupid piece of shit. The man has and has had since childhood a stutter. And chronic stuttering is a horrible thing to have to deal with. It takes work to get past it. To deal with it. But what these maggots prove what did Nancy Mace in South Carolina say? We just got our clocks cleaned by a man who can't find his pants. Stay classy, Nancy. Because from time immemorial, people with stutters have been thought to be, thanks, Mother Church, demon-possessed, mentally deficient, just plain stupid. And here in the middle of the third decade of the 21st century of the common era, the Republican Party proves day in and day out, because all the bigotries are just one big Venn diagram circle, that kind of discrimination is still alive and well. Okie doke, a day on me, says Gino. I want to be the sponsor of tomorrow's Friday on the back porch. Back porch? You mean after the show's over? Or do you want to be on Friday on the front porch? One way or the other, you get it's yours for the taking. Thank you, Gino. going up the tree early in the morning, Steve in New York says, at least it's not later in the afternoon when you have heels on. Well, I use the heels kind of like those the utility workers with their pole climbing spikes. It's a little awkward though because theirs are on their side, mine are under. Never mind, Steve. Darlene says $100. Hunter Biden, the Benghazi of our time. Dang, isn't he getting screwed on gun charges like no one else ever has? Challenge. So there's a $100 challenge on the table. The Hunter Biden, the Benghazi of our time. We will hear about Hunter Biden till we're off it to lose our minds. That challenge is on the table. We've got an hour to meet it, and that would get us down to 11:05. We'd be right smack dab in the Middle Ages. Where the Republican Party is. Huh. Thank you. Thank you, Darlene. And Kevin says, Kevin in Colorado Springs, I just sent a contribution, and I'd like to say that I believe in the message enough to send this in to keep the message and the messenger going. So if any of you out there can find it within your means to donate, please do so. Thank you, Kevin. And thank you, Kevin. Sometimes this kind of stuff keeps me going. There are other stories to get to this evening. But Ralph's just said senile. Please play this. Okay, though. Oh, I know it's going to be good just from the screen cap that begins it. What if Fox News told the truth about who's really too old to run for president?
He's too old. He's out of touch, losing his marbles at an alarming rate.
They have sinks where no water comes out. You turn it on, no water comes out. You want to wash your hands, right?
Yeah.
And you've seen this, and you turn on the sink, and it's very little.
I do want to remind everybody, this is the guy that worked with the former Klansman.
I will be Donald Trump's most loyal advocate to make sure his nominees go to the Supreme Court.
Full of his struggles and ramblings and rantings and mumbling and bumbling and stumbling, you decide. Take a look.
That deliberately surrendered our border to vicious coyotes and drug smugglers. I mean, these drug smugglers, the smuggler, a smuggler!
I find it awkward. I find it embarrassing. He's really in the early stages of some kind of senile dementia.
I hope they now go and take a look at the oranges of the investigation, the beginnings.
It's more than awkward and embarrassing. It's actually dangerous. Having someone with his mental state, to me, it's terrifying.
She speaks in rhyme.
In rhyme? What do you...
Well, the way she talks, the bus will go here and then the bus will go there because that's what buses do. It's weird.
He can't finish a sentence.
An ominous.
The man doesn't know where he's going. He doesn't know where the exit is. He's not sure how to get through a speech.
Everybody. Mr. President, you need to sign it.
Old, outdated, retire, elderly, aging, senile, dementia, slow, confused, idiot, ignorant, sleepy, gaff, bumbling, bad, terrible, disappointing, joke, profanity.
Being corrupt is bad. Being corrupt and senile is even worse.
Brought to you by the Lincoln Project. Essentially, those were all quotes about Joe Biden from Fox News TV Radio Rwanda with a juxtaposition. With real things that Nitwit Nero has done and said. Let's follow this up from now. This Donald Trump's Guide to American History.
History and culture, so important.
We are living in a time that's as evil as any time that there has ever been. You know, when I was a young man, I studied medieval times. That's what they did. They chopped off heads.
The Continental Army suffered a bitter winter of Valley Forge. Our army manned the air. It ran the ramparts. It took over the airports. It did everything it had to do.
People don't realize, you know, the Civil War, you think about it, why? People don't ask that question. But why was there the Civil War? Why could that one not have been worked out?
People don't realize, you know, if you go back to the Civil War, it was the Republicans that really did the thing.
So Robert E. Lee was a great general, and Abraham Lincoln developed a phobia.
Honest Abe. I wonder if he was really that honest, but you know what? Let's assume Honest Abe was Honest Abe.
But Lincoln had almost developed a phobia because he was having a hard time with a true great fighter and a great general, Robert E. Lee. He was going crazy. I don't know if you know this, though. General Grant.
The great general Ulysses S. Grant.
Ulysses.
He went in and he knocked the hell out of everyone. He had a serious problem, a serious drinking problem. But man, was he a good general. And he's finally being recognized as a great general.
Finally.
Frederick Douglass is an example of somebody who's done an amazing job and is being recognized more and more, I notice.
Had Andrew Jackson been a little bit later, you wouldn't have had the Civil War. He was really angry that he saw what was happening with regard to the Civil War. He said, there's no reason for this.
And remember one thing, because I always consider...
By the way, Andrew Jackson died 16 years before the Civil War.
People never give us credit for this. Abraham Lincoln was a Republican, right?
They always said nobody got treated worse than Lincoln. I believe I am treated worse.
We weren't allowed any rights. We had, for the first time in the history of our country, we had virtually no rights, no due process. So the great tariff debate of 1888, we had so much money, we could do whatever we wanted. Then in 1913, they ended tariffs, okay? Somebody got stupid, and they ended tariffs. And then in 1928, you had the Great Depression. For a lot of different reasons, not necessarily our country's fault, but a little bit our country's fault.
And I mean, people forget that at that time, Hitler was virtually unstoppable. He was going through countries like cheese.
The country of cheese, yes.
America built the Empire State Building in just 1 year. Believe it or not, in 9 months.
Can you believe that?
They say a wall is medieval. Well, so is a wheel. A wheel is older than a wall. The wheel is older than the wall. You know that?
During a heated phone conversation with Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau regarding tariffs, Trump asked, quote, "Didn't you guys burn down the White House?" Trump was apparently referring to the War of 1812, which was fought against the British. The British burned down the White
Canadian
House,
troops.
The original White House in 1814. The British.
We have to understand our past. We have to understand our history. Because if we don't know our history, it could all happen again. Have to know our history.
You know, that would be hilarious if it wasn't so terrifying. Yeah, that first clip, the senility clip, Flavio says, I love the background music, Eric Satie's Gymnopédie. Yes, I love that piece. It's just gorgeous. So, I don't know. Elegant? Stately? I think we kind of needed a break. A giggle break. And that helped a lot. Thank you, Ralphs. Oh, back into the swamp, huh? Well, let's go there. There's a bit of a follow-up. To the story we had the other night about Lauren Bobblehead Boobert, Clanny Oakley, getting booted from a production of Beetlejuice. Bobblehead, bobblehead, bobblehead. What are you doing? Get away. Well, that's true. Going back to those two Trump clips, the compilations. Steve says, you know what? You show that to the maggots and they would either not understand what was wrong or they would just say they were all fake.
Fake video. Definitely fake video. They were shopped. It's AI. My entire presidency was AI. Because I'm a very stable genius.
But there's a follow-up to Bobblehead. And how she got booted. Well, there at Beetlejuice, they asked her to leave, it turns out, because she was vaping. And not just vaping. She was vaping near a pregnant woman. You know, she's pro-life. She's going to be a 36-year-old meemaw. Because her 16-year-old boy knocked up a 15-year-old girl. Over at the Huffington Post, Josephine Harvey wrote, "The woman who said she did not recognize Boebert told the Post she asked the lawmaker to stop vaping, but the congresswoman simply said no. She said Boebert was singing along loudly with her hands in the air and took multiple long videos during the first half of the performance. And during intermission, the woman went and made a complaint. And when she came back to her seat, alongside her husband, Clanny Oakley called her a sad and miserable person. So the pro-life granny yeah. The pro-life granny, I get it, well, you know, she probably smoked with her brood. And down in Florida, when she was in the womb, Mama probably smoked with her. And well, that explains a lot now, doesn't it? And yes, per the mention that Darlene in Connecticut made a little bit ago, here we are, Hunter Biden. Not going to sing again, but there's a $100 challenge out there. And Sean has us at $75 to it. So, Sean, I applied that to the challenge, per your request. No, Hunter Biden was indicted on weapons charges that, among other things, he lied on a gun form when he was abusing drugs. And no small number of lawyers are already pointing out, you know what? He wouldn't have been indicted if his name was anything but Biden. Renato Mariotti said, it's very unlikely that Hunter Biden would be charged with any of these crimes if his last name wasn't Biden. Charges for possessing a firearm while under the influence of narcotics are rarely brought. False statement charges in this context are also rare. According to federal sentencing data, fewer than 350 people nationwide were sentenced for violating 922 G3 in 2021. Michael R. Bromwich, who used to be a DOJ Inspector General, said it doesn't happen. DOJ will need to produce data in discovery, which will show that this is the most selective of prosecutions. Harry Littman, a former prosecutor, said false statement charges against Hunter Biden are a raw deal. There appears to be nothing that happened since the plea deal unraveled through no fault of Biden other than Republican ignorant potshots. And it's a freestanding charge that DOJ basically never brings. Ethics lawyer to the White House, former, Norm Eisen said, the Hunter Biden indictment has multiple weaknesses. I know his lawyer, Abby Lowell, and well, and he'll put up a furious fight. Former senior prosecutor for Robert Mueller, Andrew Weissman, said, the only positive of the new Hunter Biden charges is that it should, in a rational world, squash the Fox attacks that DOJ is affording him favorable treatment. But it won't stop the attacks, and instead demonstrates the special counsel bending to the mob and abusing his position. Oh, God. He's right. Because they, the maggots, want blood. And in particular, they want Hunter Biden's blood. Because everything with the maggots is either projection or confession. And they know what a 200-proof fuck-up Traitor Tot Don Jr. and Eric the Dumber are. You know, their daddy is a speed freak. That's been documented by at least one person who worked closely with him on The Apprentice. And, God, Trader Tot and Kimberly Gargoyle? Her at the convention screaming, the best has yet to come! She looked like she was so far gone on an eight ball of Bolivian marching powder that she probably couldn't feel her gums. And, of course, Trader Tot Don Jr. has been a little speedy on more than one video occasion. Sad facts, says Steve in New York. Hunter Biden is the sacrificial lamb. The only problem is that, just like every other mob, you can never satisfy the bloodlust. I kind of wonder if they'd even get thoughts and prayers. Would they give tots and pears if it all just finally proved to be too much for Hunter Biden? I think they not only want him dead, they want to eat his flesh. Because that's how zombies are. It's gross. It's just gross. Quick little update on Danilo Cavalcante. He was arrested yesterday after a massive manhunt. Apparently he gave a statement to police saying that he survived for 2 weeks in Chester County, PA. He took refuge in deep, thick underbrush. He pilfered produce from gardens, drank water from the Brandywine Creek, Battle of Brandywine, anyone? And buried his poop to keep from being found. He wanted to carjack somebody and just flee to Canada. His escape came only a week after he was sentenced to life in prison for first-degree murder, having fatally stabbed his ex-girlfriend in front of her children. And dude is wanted for murder in his native home, in his home country of Brazil, back in 2017. But he became a bit of a folk hero there, with people rooting him on. U.S. Marshal Supervisory Deputy Robert Clark said he was exactly what we thought, a desperate man trying to survive on a day-to-day basis. And apparently he had survival skills because he'd worked as a laborer and a farmhand in a northern state in Brazil. He'd lived off the land, lived in the forests, and is alleged to have killed a man who owed him money. And for the first couple of days, he lived on watermelons. Huh? Put him away. Forever. Back to Hunter Biden for a second. Micah says, dollars to donuts, that if something happened to Hunter Biden, they would say that President Biden arranged it because they were getting too close to something and he's just that evil. I mean, hell, look what they did to Clinton. Wait, Micah, you think they wouldn't... They'd blame Hillary. Some maggot congressman would go out in his backyard with a 9mm pistol and shoot some watermelons. We're back to the watermelons. And claim that that proved that Hillary shot Hunter Biden. And I mentioned that there was a story that I wanted to spend some time on early in the program. Once again, it comes from the brilliant journalist at ProPublica. And as I read this today, my stomach turned, I got chills, felt nauseated. Oh, by the way, Steve in New York says, yeah, they want to drink his adrenochrome. Shades of the movie The Running Man. Randy Radar says it takes a lot of strength to stab someone to death. That guy was 5 feet tall and 120 pounds. Oh. Thank you, Kevin, up in Mass. Thank you so much. We now have $35 to go on Darlene's challenge, the Hunter Biden, the Benghazi of our time challenge. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you so much. If the challenge is fully met, that'll get us down to 1105. Thank you. And, you know, pay the power bill, which is a very big deal. Very big indeed. Back to ProPublica. So again, I was up this morning and watching my filthy morning habit. And there was a puff piece. I mean, I viewed it as a puff piece. They had former Democratic nominee for the presidency and former Secretary of State and former Senator and former First Lady Hillary Clinton on to talk about a project of the Clinton Global Initiative joining up with a global politics think tank policy analysis center, whatever. I think it's called SIPA, S-I-P-A, which is run by Columbia University in New York City. And I saw, you know, as I watched it this morning, and it was before I read this article, I thought, well, okay. Because every now and then, for instance, over the past few years, Mika will do a piece on, you know, her Know Your Value program. And, but they talked a little bit about maggot politics and whatnot. It just kind of was running in the background of my mind. Thank you, Christopher. We're down to $25 to go on Darlene's challenge. Christopher said, let's keep Robin going, y'all. Thank you, Christopher. Thank you so much. And Steve jumped in and said, put this toward whatever challenge is out there. Sorry, I can't do more. Don't you dare say you're sorry. Don't you ever, ever, ever. So we're down to $15 to go on Darlene's challenge to get us down to $11.05. Pay the power bill. Thank you. So, you know, I hear Columbia University, Columbia University, Columbia University, and because I'm a little history nerd, I remembered how Alexander Hamilton started out wanting to go to the College of New Jersey, which would go on to become Princeton, which is... and he didn't go to Princeton because Aaron Burr had already set all the records there for highest... I don't even know if they had grade point averages back in the day, probably highest marks. But he had set all the benchmarks, youngest to ever graduate, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And even at that young an age, Alexander Hamilton was a climber with a big chip on his shoulder. And so rather than going to Princeton, he went across the Hudson to what would become Columbia University. And at Columbia, he did all the same things that Aaron Burr did at Princeton, setting all the records for grades and age at graduation and all of that. And then went on to be Alexander Hamilton. Which meant along the way that he was a perv, a married man who had an affair with a woman who was set up to con him into it and then got himself blackmailed. In the discussions over the Constitution of the United States, Alexander Hamilton would argue in favor of having a monarchy instead of a chief magistrate or chief executive. And eventually get blown away by Aaron Burr on the plains at Weehawken. So later in the day, I ran across this piece from ProPublica. And once again, I found myself in that same place I often do, asking myself, what in God's name is wrong with the Ivy League? Columbia University owns and runs New York Presbyterian Hospital, and it is a stirringly well-regarded hospital. My dear friend Dan Fisher, with whom we talk from time to time on the program, got his heart transplant there, if I recall correctly. Well, this isn't that feel-good story. This is a horror. This is a nightmare. This has to do with an OBGYN. And the minute I say OBGYN, not because OBGYN, but because, well, I dare say every woman in the Horn family congregation, family community congregation, is already beginning to cringe. You remember, what's his name? Larry. Oh, the guy that sexually assaulted all the young gymnasts and practically every female athlete at Michigan State University. And then there's the doctor that Jim Jacket Off Jordan looked away from while he was raping young male athletes at the Ohio State University. Well, this is one of those stories. An OBGYN at Columbia University, Dr. Robert Haddon, had been 20 years or more, had spent his career at Columbia, and built quite the resume. And the story begins with the story of a woman named Lori Kanyok, 38 years old. Excuse me. 38 years old and a professional dancer toward the end of her career. Dance careers end early. And she got pregnant. But she had a recent spinal procedure that she was afraid might compromise her pregnancy or increase the risk of birth defects in her baby. And so she got an appointment with Dr. Haddon. She described him as having a soft-spoken, fatherly kind of way and looked like a skinny Santa Claus. And at one point in time during an exam, up in the stirrups, with a drape over the lower portion of her body so she couldn't see what was going on down there, she felt something moist touch her. She went back for a follow-up, and the nurse left the room. As she began to leave, he said, "Oh, I forgot to check your stitches," and got her back up on the table. And that's when she realized she was being licked. And she heard Dr. Haddon moan. Now, I'm not telling this for salacious purposes. I probably should have issued a trigger warning. And she went and her partner, she told him what had happened. They called the cops. The cops showed up. The cops heard their story, took their statement. This is the NYPD, and bless their hearts, they said, "Let's go arrest this pig." And then the monster had the nerve to call her and say, and leave a voicemail, "Hi, Lori, it's Dr. Haddon calling. It's like 4:30 on Friday. You know, I just got word that you called the office and you're upset and you're calling the police. What the heck happened? What's going on? Please, can we talk? If you can, please just give the office a call and, you know, or come back and talk face to face. I don't understand. I just know that I just got word from the secretary, then from our office manager and the nurse. So I'm very upset. I don't know what's going on. So please call me back. All right, take care." And the cops heard the message, and that's when they said, "Fuck him, let's go get this pig." And they arrested him. But what she didn't know was that within mere hours of arrest, he was already back out on the streets and back to practicing What did Dim Leader call it back during the Reign of Error? We don't have enough OBGYNs in this country because of the legal liabilities and the malpractice, and they can't practice their love of American women. Remember that? Well, this monster was covered for by Columbia University all the way up to the one of the most highly paid university presidents in the country, a man named Bollinger. Covered for by Lee Goldman, dean of Columbia's medical school. In the 8 weeks that Columbia had him back on staff and back doing exams, 8 women said that he assaulted him in that period of time. Over the course of his career, he saw tens of thousands of women. He delivered one baby. One baby whom he delivered. When she became a teenager, he sexually assaulted her. Cyrus Vance Jr., then the district attorney of the city of New York, let the prosecution slide. And the an assistant DA said that Columbia failed to hand over evidence in its possession, even though they were subpoenaed to do so. They did not inform the district attorney when more victims came forward. According to an inquiry, Columbia intended to destroy emails written by Haddon and his former colleagues and only found them because they were inadvertently left on an old server. Cyrus Vance Jr. said that if Columbia had fully cooperated, it might have made a difference in the decision to accept a plea. Obviously, that did not happen. His deputy, Karen Friedman Agnifilo, said Columbia didn't have clean hands here. If they didn't know, it's because they chose not to know. And he continued to be free until his victims piled up to the point that the federal government and the U.S. attorney finally took notice. He's doing 20 years. He's doing 20 years in federal time. 226 women sued him and Columbia. And without admitting liability, because that's always the way it is with civil settlements, Columbia University paid $236.5 million to settle the suits. That's $1 million in change. For each of the women he sexually assaulted. The contingent fee agreements will reduce that by a third. So they'll walk away with about $600,000. And that's probably not even all of his victims. And what ProPublica went on to say is that in recent decades, several university medical systems have provided cover for abusive doctors whose victim counts run well into the hundreds. Columbia's failures stand out even in this grim company. Unlike at Michigan State, where Larry Nassar sexually assaulted young gymnasts under the guise of medical care, no Columbia administrators are known to have lost their jobs. Unlike at the University of Michigan, where an athletics department doctor abused mostly male students, Columbia never commissioned an independent investigation into what happened under its roof. Unlike at the University of Southern California, where a staff gynecologist's abuse led to a $1 billion settlement, Columbia's president, Lee Bollinger, did not resign when the enormity of Haddon's crimes came to light. Instead, Bollinger retired in June, celebrated by a university that continues to uphold itself as a place where eternal virtues are taught and practiced. The announcement of Bollinger's successor, Manoush Shafiq, noted that her most recent book, What We Owe Each Other, in which she calls for a better social contract to underpin our economic system and challenges institutions and individuals to rethink how we can better support each other to thrive. Meanwhile, in the Haddon case, Columbia's pattern of defensive behavior is ongoing. The university still, and this was published today, hasn't informed patients that their former doctor is a convicted sex offender. And Columbia is aggressively fighting new lawsuits from victims, arguing in one case this year that it should not be held liable because Haddon's actions were outside the scope of his employment. An unnamed spokesperson responding to ProPublica said, Columbia is profoundly sorry for the pain that Robert Haddon's patients suffered as a result of his abhorrent misconduct.
Misconduct.
He purposely worked to evade oversight and engineer situations in which he would abuse his patients. We also deeply regret, based on what we know today, that Haddon saw patients for several weeks following his voided arrest in 2012. ProPublica tried to talk to over 100 of Haddon's former colleagues, and only one doctor, Jennifer Tam, would speak openly. She doesn't even practice medicine anymore. I'd like to think if I was still at Columbia, I would go on the record, but I could see how the threat of repercussions would keep people from speaking. If there was something that wasn't perfect, you better not talk about it. That was the culture of the place where she worked. We don't want to ruin the reputation. And we're talking about women whose lives, hundreds of women whose lives have been forever changed. And Columbia, frankly, doesn't give a damn. One of his patients from 1994 said, I was a freshman. It was my first exam. It wasn't until much later that I realized that he was doing was not normal. Apparently, according to the federal judge who sentenced him, Haddon, growing up in Garden City on Long Island, had a traumatic childhood. An alcoholic mama, an absentee father, and three siblings with whom Robert shared a sexual dynamic. He got his medical degree from St. George's University in Grenada. Remember that? And, of course, he was beloved. Beloved. Among his colleagues. And like any sexual predator, this doctor had a method. He targeted women for whom he would be their first exam. Or women who were pregnant for the first time. Women who did not know, because we don't exactly do the best or even an adequate job in this country of teaching people about their bodies, male, female, or non-binary. And so he always did a breast exam. Even though a breast exam isn't required during every prenatal visit, didn't know that a breast exam is usually done when it is done, one breast at a time, not grabbing them both and acting like you're trying to tune in Radio Free Europe. He would do scoliosis checks and mole checks, insisting that his patients be entirely naked to do so. And he hurt women. He palpated one woman's cervix so hard that it lifted her off the table. In Columbia, Columbia University, ignored them all. It is a lengthy read, this piece. It is possibly triggering. If you can bear it, it's worth reading. It's over at ProPublica.org. And it points to a much larger problem. As ProPublica points out, nationwide. And it seems that as is the case with every social or criminal problem we have, these are problems we choose to have. That much ballyhooed president of Colombia, Bollinger, chose not to side with the victims of crime, chose to protect an institution over human beings, chose to protect his very well-padded bank account. Over women who had been violated. How can there be expiation for that, forgiveness for that? And of course, Columbia's in New York. New York is a pro-choice state. Presumably, according to that new president of Colombia, they want to empower women, but they don't much want to talk about everything they did to disempower them, or to even issue an apology. It was a grim and horrifying read. But the things that we run across sometimes and all too often are, and looking away from it, for the likes of us who want to be awake in the moment, something we can't do. It's great to get away once in a while. It's great to relax. It's great to put things to one side. Self-care. But if what Plato said, the unexamined life is not worth living, then we want to have a life that we know we have lived and lived worthily. And it's not just knowing things, it's acting on things. It's speaking out. It's saying, even with one voice, just one simple soul voice, pointing these things out. But my God, I come back to my initial query, what the fuck is wrong with the Ivy League? Sure, University of Southern California, sure, University of Michigan, sure, Michigan State, sure, the Ohio State University. How did that one not get mentioned? I guess because Jim Jacketoff Jordan continues to say that he didn't know nothing about raping no athletes. These massive healthcare systems get so big. I mean, they're corporations, and they get so damn big that the people in them, the monsters in them, are overlooked, and the decent people are afraid to speak up. One of his labor and delivery nurses, this Dr. Haddon, said he was just such a wonderful man. And there's kind of a disconnect between nurses and doctors, and nurses don't rat out doctors. And that was when she was queried by plaintiff's counsel for why she didn't speak up, for why she didn't say something. I didn't want to believe it was true. Sexual assaults over the course of not weeks or months, but decades. Decades. Jesus. So go and have a read. Maybe don't do it now, or, you know, depending on what time it is where you're listening, when you're listening. Don't do it at a time when you can be of at some degree of peace of mind. Because it's not, I mean, odds are it's happening everywhere. It's just that some haven't been caught. Or some people just don't know. You know, a doctor goes into an operating suite and is supposed to amputate a right leg and amputates the left instead. That becomes kind of obvious. And then somebody still has to go back and do the correct procedure. I don't know why this triggered me to go back and think about all the noxious things that Dim Leader said back during the Reign of Error, but he had a bee in his bonnet about medical malpractice and how the doctors were being abused. By the way, Dr. Haddon was sexually assaulting women during the Reign of Error. At one point, he described a woman who, Dim Leader did, he described a woman who went in for a mastectomy, a radical mastectomy, the complete removal of an entire breast. And the surgeon fucked up and took off the wrong one. He took off the non-cancerous one. And so she had to go through that trauma all over again and go in and deal with the cancerous breast and all the follow-up that breast cancer entails. And George W. Bush, the President of the United States, said, and then she got a big payout from a one-way jury. Kind of like she won life's lottery. And that's what I meant earlier when I said that. And I know I keep hammering, but I think we've got to. We've got to realize that these essential problems of the Republican Party, of so-called conservatives, they're not like some Beaujolais Nouveau that's barely a year old. These are dust-covered vintage wines, bitter and noxious and toxic, that have been laid down for decades. And it takes shape in every aspect of people's lives. The Republican Party and priests who were raping children have been railing against the rights of women to control the workings of their own body for 50 years. Or more. More. Older LGBTQ people, remember what it was to have to live in the shadows and live in the closet. And have their entire lives be suspect. To be sure, that was not driven entirely by Republicans. But as the climate and as the culture began to change, that hatred became almost the entire and sole province of the Republican Party. It is who they are. They cannot exist without a largely powerless group to hate. And in some ways, it has been present in our politics and our culture from the first moment that a white foot set down on the soil of this hemisphere. Remember, Columbus's first expedition, one of the first things they did was rape and kidnapping and theft. Now, I guess if Monkey Up DeClantis were to hear this, he'd probably cry and scream that I was woke. And him with a history degree from Harvard. He knows this history too. But he knows that the rubes don't. And that they can be cheap, they can be played like a cheap pawn shop fiddle. So that's the program. Thank you so very much to a kind internet friend, Anonymous. We finished Darlene's challenge and a little left over, so we're down to 1095. Mark, thank you so much. We are down to 945. Oh, I'm going to be in a little bill paying frenzy as soon as the program's over, which it is. Mark, thank you so much. Thank you for the challenges, Darlene. routes. Thank you for all your kind responses. Your a la carte contributions. Thanks for keeping this program on the air. Thank you so much. Thanks to all of our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you, like I said, to our a la carte contributors and our challengers. And hey, tomorrow's program will be brought to you by Gino in Utah. Thanks again, Gino. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Roger, in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, like and subscribe, please. Leave a comment for the lonely algorithms. Tell your friends and neighbors about what a wonderful conversation is going on here. And that's not me talking about me. That's me talking about y'all. It's that time. Make plans to get your booster. Get your booster. Like Paul from Parts Unknown said, don't fool around because they will get harder to obtain when shit gets bad or worse. Wear your mask in groups of more than five, even if they're not maggots, but especially around the maggots. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, carry some with you, pocket or purse, maintain your social distance as best you can. And, well, if some ex-president if you hear him chuckling in the shower, she won last lottery. I think I'll paint a picture. Avoid dim leader like the plague. Because he is. And was. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Love you, Wayne. Later.